The last session of this module is called Mental Immunity. In critical situations, we often find ourselves at an imaginary crossroads where we have two options. We can either support ourselves or, and this is important to accept, become the biggest saboteur of our own well-being and send ourselves straight to the bottom. Think of it as an internal dialogue between two versions of your personality. One is an optimistic cheerleader who applauds and encourages you with words like, "You can do it. You're a totally awesome person, and this is just a small challenge that you'll conquer with grace." The other personality, well, he's a bit like a negative troll who has nothing but sarcastic comments and a suffocating dose of doubt. "You can't do this. You're just not up to it. You better lie low and wait for disaster." Now imagine which of those two versions is winning right now. Supporting ourselves in moments of crisis, when the whole world seems to be wobbling on the edge of a cliff and gravity has just decided to put in overtime, is crucial. But let's be honest, it often feels like a David versus Goliath battle. When everything around us falls and chaos takes over, we tend to run to what we already know. And what do we really know well? Self-criticism. After all, we practice it with such precision that it could be our backup profession. After all, we have the masterful skill of evaluating our every move, our every mistake, and saying to ourselves at the right, actually wrong moment, "Why did you even try? It was inevitable that you had no chance of making it. If by chance someone else doesn't know how to knock us down, just know that we're going to do it right." But now, a little hope, because hope dies last. There's a way to choose support over sabotage, even when you'd rather crawl under the covers and behave in a way that even the postman can't see you at home. The trick is to be your own understanding parent. Yes, that's right. Look at yourself as a nervous, scared child who sometimes just needs a little understanding and a pat on the back. If you say to yourself, "Hey, I didn't make it today, but I have another opportunity tomorrow," you're shutting out the negativity and allowing optimism to flourish with that statement alone. And let's face it, supporting yourself is a lot more fun than drowning in self-pity. When you treat yourself like your best friend, you'll see what an incredible effect it has on you. I mean, is criticizing your best friend like the classic monologue, "Wow, you're really incompetent. Why didn't you do better? Anyone could have done that. I'll bet my favorite teacup that you didn't." Then why are we talking to ourselves like this? At the same time, it is good to remember that choosing support over sabotage is not always easy. It's just like going to the gym for the first time. It hurts at first, you feel like you're not up to it, and you probably tell yourself a few times that you won't go next time. But regular exercise, even if it's just a little bit, will gradually make you stronger, and it's the same with supporting yourself. It takes practice. Start small. When you get something right, even if it's just tying your shoelaces on the first try, praise yourself. Do you know what progress that is? Why should praise be reserved only for completing serious tasks? Learn to be your biggest fan for even the smallest steps. And now, a bit of humor to finish. Imagine that life pushes you into the water, and instead of taking a swimming ring and trying to swim to shore, you pull out a brick and decide that it will be your rescue object. This is exactly what it looks like when you choose sabotage in a critical situation. So, friends, let's leave the bricks for building houses and instead put our hand on our heart, hold tight to that imaginary circle, and swim on, because supporting yourself is the best investment. Our imaginary psychological first aid kit should also include equipment for the moments when things don't go according to plan and we somehow fail. Yes, I'm talking about those moments when life trips us up and we end up with our head in the mud asking, "Why me?" Because failure is not a question of if, but when. In life, sometimes things fail for everyone. Yet few people build up a protective mental gear for such moments. Yet it pays off, believe me. There are different reactions to failure. Psychologist Guy Winch described them using the example of young children who were given a tricky task: to remove a teddy bear out of a box using a button. One little girl gave up so quickly that you wouldn't even have time to put it in the statistics. Another little boy froze, and a third child flapped his arms, stomped, and sulked like an angry hamster. Only one brave little lady managed to succeed and joyfully returned to the task with gusto. Which reaction are you? Failure can be processed in different ways. We can give up. We can disregard the task and the world around us. We can get angry, or we can remain passive with the external and internal blinds drawn. And like those kids with the teddy bear, we adults can sometimes be so overwhelmed by what has happened that we stop trying altogether. But try to remember the last time something didn't go your way. A lunch gone wrong, a presentation that didn't meet with applause, or something bigger, like not getting accepted to your dream school or having your application for a promotion rejected. Some reactions are ingrained in us from a young age, while others build up over time. Whether you're a crying child or an adult pragmatist who just sighs quietly and blames it on poorly aligned stars, what matters is what you do next. The psychological consequences of failure are similar to a cold, and sometimes even pneumonia if you let the situation go too far. It starts slowly. After the first failure, there are small knocks to our confidence. I guess I'm not smart enough. Or maybe I'm just not the type to handle this. Worse, other complications start to pile up. Loss of motivation, feelings of helplessness, or even fears that everything you do will lead to another fiasco. It's fascinating how our minds can distort reality. After success, we say to ourselves, "I'm good, I'm good at this." But after failure, it's suddenly, "I'm terrible, I'm not really good at anything." It's as if failure puts negative filters on our psyche, similar to how illness can amplify a cough or headache. Even athletes demonstrate that their perception of reality changes depending on success. The ball seems bigger and easier to hit when you're winning, and smaller and more elusive when you're failing. It is the same with our perception of ourselves. After failure, we get the feeling that the whole world is blacker and we are inferior. I can't do this. No one takes me seriously. I've totally messed up. We should put these statements on our red list of forbidden thoughts because they only deepen our sense of frustration. So what belongs in that famous psychological first aid kit that helps us escape from a crisis scenario with our health? First and foremost, the ability to nip negative thoughts in the bud. When you feel that voice in your head that says, "I'm useless," try to interrupt it. Say something to yourself along the lines of, "No, maybe I just didn't get it right today. That doesn't mean I'll fail next time." Another key is to prepare a mental antidepressant in the form of regaining control of the situation. Failure often hits our ego, but let us never forget that most failures are not definitive. Did you have a bad day today? Tomorrow is a fresh start. The boss didn't look happy. Next time, you can tune out and charm yourself. A key takeaway is to view failure as a temporary setback, not a lasting judgment of character. Don't forget to be kind to yourself. If you burn your lunch, you don't tell the oven it's a dummy, do you? So why tell yourself that if you can't handle one battle? Also, pack a dose of perspective, humor, and, most importantly, courage in your psychological first aid kit, because each failure today is just a step towards doing a little bit more next time. And remember, if you mess up, you still have room to start again. How to have a constructive internal dialogue about failure. This skill is literally gold, but don't expect it to fall on you like a bolt from the blue. It takes practice, determination, and a dash of common sense. Guy Winch, an American psychologist, by the way, who is to emotional first aid what Jamie Oliver is to quick recipes, recommends two crucial things after failure. Get support and realize what we can take from the failure for the future. Simple, right? Not at all, but let's break it down. Step one, get support. Let's start with the easy part, because let's face it, if you missed the tram, melted ice cream at a job interview, or just spilled the sauce on your white t-shirt, talking about it with someone who understands you is kind of part of the normal human survival package. It's called emotional venting. Grab a friend, a partner, a colleague, or maybe even a dog if they're a good listener and spill the beans. Shared failure, half failure. But watch out. Let's not turn this into endless wailing. Support from others is not about nodding at you for 20 minutes and saying, "That really sucks." The goal is to give the other party a little kick in the right direction, ideally towards step number 2. Step 2. Realize the lesson. This is the hard part. When a plan, a project, an intention fails, or even just a trivial attempt to change a light bulb without hitting a chandelier, yes, that's a challenge. The brain sometimes likes to sink into a swamp of self-pity. At such times, you'd rather just hand over command to the fridge, snuggle under the blanket, and wait for the failure to rot away on its own. But it's in these moments that discipline peeks out and holds a mirror up to you. The rational part of your brain is whispering softly, "Man up, hero. You've learned something, so go on, name it." And yes, sometimes it's like waiting for your favorite package to arrive in the mail in 2 weeks. Painfully slow, but eventually it arrives. I definitely recommend getting a paper and pencil and writing a little something down. What specifically led to the failure? What could I have done differently? Is there something that was causing the problem but is out of my control? What small victory did I still manage? Don't worry. You don't need a complete shower of optimism to do this. You just need to be completely objective. This rational overview will usually absorb at least a third of your inner calamity. Success and failure. Yes, there is such a thing. Now comes the most paradoxical part. Learn to find success even where it looks like a total failure. Did you finish second in the race? Yes, you won silver. It's not called second place by accident. Didn't get your dream job? Maybe you improved your communication skills in job interviews to a level that would make an Oscars presenter envious. The second time around, you'll be unstoppable. And if you don't feel better anyway, remind yourself of a fundamental truth. Success tends to be a bit overrated. It may sound crazy, but it's been proven that it's the journey that brings satisfaction rather than the destination itself. Just going in a direction, creating something, and trying new things is rewarding. Take back control. If feeling like a failure is knocking control out of your hands, it's time to grab it back tighter than a stuffed suitcase on a weekend trip. Accept responsibility. This doesn't mean you're responsible for everything, but it does mean you have power over yourself. If we blamed our every failure on circumstances, we'd soon end up victims with no chance of change. Winch often mentions that taking responsibility is, paradoxically, one of the most powerful ways to maintain inner freedom. But watch out for analysis paralysis. If you dwell too long on your shortcomings, it can turn into what is called rumination, a mental back and forth over unpleasant events without reaching any conclusion. Eventually, you will feel so bad that you will forget what the original goal was. In short, stop thinking about the pink elephant, as we have already said. When negative thoughts are fully focused on you, it's best to consciously redirect your attention. Exercise, turn on a TV show, or call someone who can pour some optimism into your mouth. Let failure sit in your head. It doesn't beat you up, even though it feels like it sometimes. It's just an indicator that you tried something. Laugh at it, talk about it, put it down on paper, and maybe even make that imaginary comma for the work you did at the end, and step forward, enriched by the experience. You won't be afraid of what moves you. And what about when diminished mental immunity comes into play? That's when things start to happen. Don't immediately imagine a pile of broken plates or a lively Bridget Jones-style debate with the mirror. Mental immunity is something we carry around invisibly inside, and when that protective layer of ourselves starts to weaken, we can become much more susceptible to little things that would normally be completely harmless to us. Suddenly, the slightest comment from a colleague or an unfortunately chosen emoticon in a text message has the power of a tsunami. First, we must acknowledge that lowered mental immunity may have root symptoms that afflict many of us. Common triggers include rejection, feelings of guilt, loneliness, failure, loss, or endlessly going over an event that could easily be closed if we let it. Such internal smudges on our psyche can lead to a weakening of something very important, our confidence. And here begins the whole game, which is a bit like a bad joke of our subconscious. In practice, it works simply. When we don't think well of ourselves, any criticism hits us like a sharp arrow, and there's a whole team of self-defeaters waiting inside to applaud the criticism. We go for a blow from the outside and add a few more ourselves. "You messed this up," mostly continues with an internal monologue. "And by the way, your hair looks terrible today. And what were you actually thinking when you decided to wear that shirt?" Yes, our minds can be tricky and overreact sometimes. So, what happens next? We tend to see things in black. There is a cognitive distortion. We start to blame ourselves for things we can't realistically do, and we take personally even a passerby's harmless comment like, "Nice weather today, isn't it?" Because we immediately think maybe she was being sarcastic. Instead of waving our hands at the little things, we let them see to themselves. Minor disappointments like your boss's not-so-enthusiastic look, losing a table football game at the office, or the fact that a friend canceled a meeting at the last minute suddenly feel like disasters. How do we get out of this? Fortunately, we're not alone. The good news is that if we start consciously working on our confidence, we can break the chain of these self-defeating mechanisms. Guy Winch, for example, recommends emotional hygiene, taking care of our emotions as regularly and consistently as we brush our teeth. By doing so, we teach our minds to be kinder. This kind treatment of ourselves is then the starting point for not humiliating our own selves unnecessarily and for keeping our confidence in good enough shape. And why do I say good enough? Because there's a little secret here. Research shows that too much self-confidence is often no gain. Those who exhibit it tend to shift responsibility to others, have a harder time dealing with criticism, and sometimes get into conflicts both in relationships and in the workplace. Narcissistic attitudes may sound appealing, but they can make life very difficult. So it's a lot fairer to be on the road, to admit your insecurities sometimes, but not let them eat you up. And what's more important? To like yourself just a little bit, because it is in balance and acceptance of yourself that the key to resilience against minor psychological bugs lies. And if we learn to be kind to each other, then know that even the biggest criticism can turn into a lesson, and minor disappointments won't ruin our week. To our soul, we begin to be like elite doctors who know when to put on the medicine and when to just smile with a "I can do this." Because honestly, who else should handle it better than you? Let's dive into practical part one more time in this module. In today's hectic times, it's easy to forget to take care of our mental health. Meditation, exercise, and other techniques may seem like an added duty, but emotional hygiene is about finding balance and maintaining a healthy mental state. Step 1. Awareness of one's own emotions. How do I feel now? Take a few minutes to reflect on what you are experiencing before you start your activity. What happened today? Make a daily record of what happened to you, everything that made you happy and everything that upset you. Step 2. Express and release emotions. Write your emotions. Take your time and write down all the feelings you carry inside you. Write a list of your feelings. Divide the page into two parts, one for positive feelings and one for negative feelings. Positive feelings. Joy. Today, I was happy about a small thing like a stranger's smile. Gratitude. I felt grateful for a friend's support. Well-being. I felt good about spending time outdoors in nature. Enthusiasm. I felt excited about a new project I want to start working on. Calm. I felt a sense of relief before going to bed. Negative feelings. Anxiety. Sometimes I have been plagued with anxiety about upcoming work responsibilities. Frustration. I got frustrated when I couldn't keep to my exercise plan. Sadness. I felt sad when I remembered old memories. Dissatisfaction. I felt dissatisfied when I didn't get feedback on my work. Confusion. I felt confused about my future and what to do next. Step 3. Reflection. After making your list, take time to self-reflect. What feelings are most common? Think about which emotions came up the most and what they might mean. How do you feel when you say or write them? Observe whether certain feelings evoke stronger reactions for you and why. How might you replace negative feelings with something positive? Consider how you can react to negative feelings in ways that can bring you back to feelings of well-being or calm. Last step, take care of your body. Create space for positive thinking. Listen to others. Take time at the end of the week to evaluate what has made a positive difference for you and what hasn't. Schedule one day to focus on yourself and do only what you enjoy.